Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the April 26, 2020 session, focusing on 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 17 through 23, Holy Action. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Well, we continue in 1 Peter, and we continue to be stay-at-home.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yes. So I'm curious, what is it you miss most about not having to stay at home?
I guess I'm one of those. In addition to the weekly grocery store trip, I like to do the pop into the market to get a couple fresh things for whatever we need that day. That day's, and I'm sure there's wasteful things, but the pick up something fresh for supper.
Yeah.
Whether it's some fish that was just brought in or some, fresh vegetables that just came in. So, and I know that sounds privileged, but I, as much as it is convenience now, I don't love someone else picking out my groceries. I miss doing that for my family.
I just miss being an extrovert. I just miss being out in feeding off the energy of so many people, especially because so much of my week is spent on a campus, a big campus. Yeah. And so I got students and faculty and staff and some of them are my church folks. And then I'm in town with, I'm just missing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think, I'm the same, Bert. I'm missing people in community. I'm a little more, of an ambivert. Like I enjoy the alone time, but I really am missing just kind of bumping into people, making those little connections throughout the week. But I think overall that is the freedom, right? Mm-hmm. There's definitely a kind of, oh, wait, I forgot this. I need to go and grab it. Oh, wait, no, I can't. Yeah. And so I'm definitely a fly by the seat of my pants kind of person. And so the need to plan every time I go shopping so that I get everything that I need all at once and all that. It's just a different way to think.
Yeah, I think for us, we miss dining out. We, our kids are all grown, and so it's just Regina and I, and so it's pretty easy for us to just, hit a restaurant up, and that's not happening anymore. Mm-hmm. So we particularly miss our favorite places, and just the energy of being out and about in society. Well, I hope we're all coping and staying healthy, and it's so good that we do stay at home and do that to protect others. So, Bert, could you help us get started in this bit of 1 Peter?
Well, I feel pretty inadequate this week. The Beatles sing, we get by with a little help from our friends, so I'm going to get by with a little help from another theologian who is not my friend. I've never met him. He's in Australia. So there you go. His name is William Loder. And I'm going to be paraphrasing a lot, kind of talking about some important things that he points out about this text that I found quite meaningful. And I want to warn you, my initial impression when I read things like 1 Peter, the way I've grown up, is everything is related to some type of doctrine of the crucifixion. What does Christ's death and resurrection mean? And so when I see things like this text, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And he helped me see this not in terms of doctrinal meaning, but in terms of ethical living, which now I can't see this text any other way. And he talks about that 1 Peter is telling us in our text today that mutual love is the center of all that we do. Love with one another is what we are called to do. And that the context of 1 Peter sets this apart, sets up a contrast. One opposing view or contrasting view is the way of the world, the way of the empire, in which indulgence at the expense of others is celebrated, as opposed to pleasure and fulfillment in holiness by becoming loving people. And that phrase struck me this week, indulgence at the expense of others, because I just live in a state where people wanted their freedom to keep doing what they're doing and not be bothered by the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic that's going to cost lots of lives. And so that struck with me. Now, he goes on and he talks about lots of stuff. First, verse 17, that in God there's no favorites, there's no discrimination, there's no corruption. And if we take that and turn it upside down, that means that we have positive regard for everyone. And this principle that God should be guiding our lives as new believers or as believers in Christ is that any and all discrimination based on gender, race, culture, religion, sexual orientation, age, ability or disability, healthcare access, all of this stuff goes out the window. And again, that just confronts what I'm seeing in my context right now. I mean, this is how I'm hearing everything, so y'all just have to bear with me on this. He says the ideal that First Peter is telling us as believers in Christ is that Christ has made us new, and this is not the same as the chosen models of the empire or the media, be they Barbie dolls or the great white male. Now, that'll preach. Now, it also warns, there's this prophetic judgment from 1 Peter that God's not going to play games with us, and God's not going to let us manipulate our faiths so we can be impressive and survive in the media market and in the empire. Let's see, I'm kind of skipping down to some things here that really jumped out with me. Here's something from verse 18. Silver and gold will not liberate you. This theologian says to speak in our age right now, money will not set you free. Against the creed of making money, the author of 1 Peter contrasts that with the vulnerability of a slain lamb. And here we begin to get all this Passover imagery of Christ in his self-giving love through his death and his life and his death. And that is love which liberates us, not money, not greed, not selfishness, not indulging our human pleasures and impulses, but it is love for others and love for God that liberates us. And that this is what is holy. And therefore, the creed of greed, as he calls it, is unholy. And he says that in verse 20 and 21, and I love this, it's a creedal formation that's making a mythology, a narrative for us to live by, that beyond the love poured out from Galilee to Jerusalem, faith sees the movement of God in the world of the Spirit, saying yes, acclaiming this apparent shame in the world's terms as the moment worthy of glory, and talks about God's purpose of the action. And again, this is where I said it's taken me from doctrinal stuff about Christ's death to action, holy action, that holiness is not in wealth and power. God, this is a great line, God is not the chaplain to the empirical system then or now, despite our repeated attempts to co-opt it. The model is the slain lamb, and the concrete outcome is mutual love. And that is what it means to be born again. That is what it means to live a new life that Christ has given us. Now, we are always trying to supplement God with the values that have made us well off and given us the empire. And he ends with this. Chapter 2 will tell us that we have to abandon such tricks, which I guess we're going to get to that next week because we're going to be in Peter for a while now. What, 6 weeks? Is that what we talked about? Four more weeks? So I look forward to hearing what y'all have to say, and forgive me for being stuck in my context in my moment, but hopefully y'all have heard something in this too that we can talk about for the next 20 or 30 minutes.
Bert, I'm so glad you brought those words from William Loder. He's one of my favorites to read as well. I definitely go to him when I am preparing every week and enjoy and appreciate the particular perspective that he often brings to the text. So if you were going to choose somebody to pull from, I think you made a good one. One day maybe we should take a trip to Australia and meet him. I'm all for that. But as you were talking, I think that the direction that you're going with this is exactly where the author of 1 Peter wanted those early Gentile Christians to go. I like that you brought up how so often when we read this text, we just say, because of what Jesus did, this, this, and this is true. And oftentimes it takes the responsibility off of us in changing our behavior or in living differently. But really what the author I think is saying here is Jesus showed us how to love. And now that's how we're supposed to go love. And it is in correcting systems that are harmful to other people. It is in choosing to take action that helps the whole rather than just ourselves. It is choosing people over institutions and communities over government. It is choosing to affect individual lives so that that helps the whole community. Rather than supporting corporations that don't support the people who work for them. I love it. I think you went in a great direction with this text, and I really appreciate it.
I'm struck. You know, we were joking about this earlier before we started recording, but I'm struck once again how this is not one of those God and me passages that. And so I went back to the Greek and looked at it. And yes, all these yous in this passage are plural. Single one of them. This isn't how do I, Daniel Glaze, trust in God and take care of the person standing next to me. But this is us as a human family. Mm-hmm. God is speaking in that Southern vernacular to all y'all here. part of that understanding and dismantling of systems and choosing people over the faceless institutions and systems that hurt and wreak havoc is realizing that it is the work of us all. Because we were joking, you know, I find myself saying over and over again, remember, this is plural language here.
You do. Yeah.
It makes a difference in how we read it.
It makes a huge difference. It is so hard for us to grasp that because we have made the individual a golden calf.
Not just
in terms of economy or politics or our culture, but in our own Christian religion. We have idolized individualism, hyper-individualism, individual salvation. There's no communal responsibility because all that matters is, are you going to heaven or hell?
Yeah, you know, have you ever heard people talk about vertical and horizontal relationships? Like, there's God and me, and then there's me and other people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is there no God in us? Wait a minute, that's missing something huge. But that kind of...
It puts us at the center.
Pardon me, it bastardizes our faith and our the God who created us for communion with one another and with God, not as separate things.
Yeah.
And it's a moral issue as well.
Because
we will do that. We will say, well, that's a terrible thing, but I don't do that. But if I participate in a system that perpetuates an injustice, then I'm part of that, or at least I have the responsibility to use my power and ability to challenge and change that system to make it more fair. So it's not just enough for me to go, well, I didn't own slaves. But I do participate in a system that has benefited from and continues to benefit from the work of people who were never paid.
And right now we're very excited that some of us, or a lot of our listeners, will be getting a nice check from the government to help us tide us over while we're not working. The people that we need right now aren't going to get that money. Undocumented workers who are still working in the farms to get us the food to survive aren't going to get that money. Well, they shouldn't be here. That's the unholiness of this text, that this text is calling unholy. Because Jesus, as we do it unto Jesus.
Bert, you said we've made the individual a golden calf. But when we buy into that in any shape, form, or fashion, that means we make ourselves, each one of us to ourselves, makes ourselves a golden calf.
Yes.
And it's so easy to get caught up in it. Even those of us who don't want to go that way, right? It's, oh, I've got to take care of this for me and my family. I've got to make sure that they've got what they need. And certainly, I'm not saying we should abdicate responsibilities, no. But there are those of us who are able to, in some ways, ride this out fairly comfortably. Some of us will be able to continue to do our work and get paid for it, at least where we are right now. We'll be able to get the most of the food that we need. We might have to ration the toilet paper a little bit. We might have to, you know, take some of those measures. But there are those of us who can ride it out like that. And I think that there is a responsibility of us to figure out how that we're going to help those who aren't in the same place. I already have friends who have lost their jobs and aren't sure how they're going to make ends meet because they were working part-time or they're bivocational ministers and both of those jobs couldn't keep them, right? I mean, it's just...
And it may be that those two jobs didn't together provide health insurance either.
Correct. Absolutely. That, you know, in the best of circumstances, it could have been made to work, but it's something that falls apart when something like this happens. I mean, it's affecting people in every sector, at every level. I think it's just...
You mentioned the making ourselves the golden calf, and that's the whole idea of this, the self-made man, right?
Right.
We worship ourselves. Well, I did this. Why do they have to do this? It's the right. worshiping of the self right. above God in all of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, safe distancing, practicing good safe distance and all this stuff is such a nice, comfortable middle class thing. Because in urban areas and in poverty,
right.
there's overcrowding, there's poor sanitation, there's poor health, all that kind of stuff. These are middle class discomforts when we talk about things, like you just said.
Right.
But the whole idea of practicing social distance in crowded urban areas,
mm-hmm.
you can't.
Right.
I mean, you just can't.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not my problem, you see. That's the worshiping yeah. of the self.
That's right. That's right. That's something yeah. else that's away from me.
Yeah. How do people keep social distancing or physical distancing in prison?
Exactly.
Well, not my problem, you know. That kind of thinking really flies in the face of the communal ways in which we were created to live and mm-hmm. love. And
what terrifies me, y'all, is that we seem to be willing to let those undeserving people die in our prisons. Well, they shouldn't have been there. Or they shouldn't have done what they've done. Right? In the detention centers along the border
mm-hmm.
Of people who are in fleeing worse, up till now, worse conditions in other countries coming here for hope. And now being almost like we're letting our shortage because we've not been prepared for these type of things, even though we've been told for years that we're not prepared, we need to be stockpiling and preparing, and we haven't done it. Letting our shortage now make us live out that philosophical nightmare of playing lifeboat. Who in our overcrowded hospitals is worth getting the ventilator?
Mm-hmm.
And who are we going to not give it to? I mean, this is, y'all going to have to come up with some nice way to end this because, you know, we're getting into terrifying stuff that is completely unholy for a nation that boasts of its faith in the Bible and God. One of my dear friends, whom all of y'all know, said she has felt like, more now than ever before, like the Old Testament prophets who yell and scream and shake their fist. You don't understand what's coming. You don't understand what's coming. You don't understand what's coming. You've got to change. And nobody listens. And nobody listens until everything collapses. And she's been shaking her fist at family and friends and leaders for weeks and months because she pays attention to, you know, science and pays attention to what's been going on around the world. It's coming. It's coming. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And now people don't have toilet paper or food and they're freaking out. And she's like, now I know how Amos and Micah and Jeremiah mm-hmm. and Isaiah felt. So now I'm going to shut up and let y'all find some hope for us. please.
Challenge accepted, Bert. I don't want to just, you know, put a nice little bow on it and say everything's okay. But verses 22 and 23 give me some measure of hope. Because we have genuine mutual love for one another, loving one another deeply from the heart, even though we've made a mess of things, even though we have made the individual the, you know, the pinnacle of creation or the golden calf or whatever our biblical metaphor we want to use, verse 23, we can be and we have been born anew. And I don't want to be simplistic here, but it's never too late to do something that's right.
Amen.
I have participated in and probably perpetuated systems that have been hurtful to other people. Whether advertently or inadvertently, I've probably done both. I have participated in my share of oppression of others, and we all have. But it's never too late for me to say, what can I do now? How might I be born anew now through the living and enduring Word of God? How might I be about bringing life and liberation to people that are every bit as beloved of God as I am? Mm. That doesn't neatly tie everything up, but that does provide a challenge to, you know, someone like me who though I try to have my heart in the right place, I know that I represent at least systems of privilege and oppression. So how do we use that voice to help bring about liberation of all God's children? It's a challenge for me.
Thank you, Daniel, because you're right, and I agree with you, and I believe in you. I believe what you said, and I believe the scripture. That's where the hope is, and that's been my struggle, is I have to, it's like saying the serenity prayer. I have to let go of the things that I have no control over and do what I can, you know, the things I can control, which is what's in front of me and who's in front of me. Look for the helpers, Mr. Rogers says, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where the good is. And I remember that line from Viktor Frankl, who said that in the darkest moments of people starving to death and being rotting away with diseases inside the concentration camps, there's still that old guy, bones are falling apart as he's walking along, and he's giving his last piece of bread to someone else. He says that's, no matter how evil everything looks, you find, and if you look, you'll see the good is still there. And the biblical promise is that the good is going to outlast the bad. And that, you're right, Daniel, that, thank you, because I need that reminder from time to time. We can do better, and it's never too late for us to do what is right, or never too late for me to do what is right, even if nobody else is.
Glennon Doyle Melton is one of my favorite bloggers now /vlogger, I don't know. But she's someone I enjoy following, and she captured me for the first time when she said the way that she finally figured out how to get better from all of the things that she suffered with was there was this kind of voice that came to her that said, just do the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how she's chosen to live her life is, okay, I have no idea where to go. I don't know what to do. I don't know what's right. What's the next right thing? I don't have to know the next 10 right things. I just got to figure out the next right thing, which might mean get up and take care of myself so that then I can take care of somebody else. And I think about, so this time that we find ourselves in right now is bringing, for so many of us, the brokenness of our systems into stark relief. Things that we knew were broken, but we kind of all limped along a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're realizing how vulnerable we are. Each country that has been ransacked by this virus has become clearly aware of their vulnerabilities, particularly on the level of healthcare, but in so many other ways. Our economies, as powerful as they seem, mm-hmm. are really quite vulnerable. They don't offer us nearly the assurance that we pretend or think that they do. Even those who are incredibly wealthy and control these economies, they are choosing to make decisions that hurt people because they know they are vulnerable. And so I think, you know, we have this massive world event that is, quite frankly, just raising the anxiety of all of us. And so many of us have become so very aware of our own frailty as humans and our vulnerability as humans and as our human systems. And so, you know, there is this kind of moment where we can go, oh, what do we need to fix? Where do we need to put the energy? And at the same time, none of us have any energies to make any of that right because we're exhausted and we're doing the best that we can to get out of bed in the morning and look at the news and see how high the death toll has risen or how high the number of cases has risen. But I think this, I love what you said about it, it's really never too late. So if today, when you're listening to this, you're just too tired to fix something, well, that's okay because it really isn't ever too late. And so I think we can each begin to think in our own individual ways how we can help the collective. So we give our individual selves to help the whole. And I think that that's what Jesus showed us how to do. Jesus suffered and died for humanity. And there's so many ways you can talk about what that means, and that would be a whole nother podcast. But at the end of the day, that's what happened. Jesus gave his life for all of us. So he gave of himself for the whole, and he showed us the way we're supposed to love one another. And the writer of 1 Peter is calling those early Christians and us to love the way Jesus loved, which means to give of ourselves for the whole. And so maybe that means picking up one less bag of toilet paper the next time you go to the grocery store. Maybe it means thinking about how you fill your medication so that you only have to make one trip to the pharmacy instead of five trips in a month. That's what I've got several people I have to pick up medication for, and I'm trying to figure out how can I work this so that I can do that. I'm fortunate enough that my healthcare made it possible for us to fill some prescriptions early, right? So asking those questions, what can I do to do my part in this moment? And then I think that we can let that transform the ways that we live our life as we come out of this very difficult and painful time.
Yeah, Nikki, you said a couple of things that really helped me, because one of the unholy things we talked about is the worship of the self and individualization.
Right, right.
But not just that, but as nations, we thought of my economy, their economy.
Right.
This country's
right.
economy, and national borders. And
right.
we've had this wave of nationalism across the world
yeah.
right now in the last few years. And now we're realizing what Peter says, right? Oh, what First Peter says, we're all connected, mm-hmm. deeply
yeah.
connected.
Yeah.
So that what goes on with my brother and my sister in China, and what goes on with my brother and sister in Guatemala, and what goes on with my brother and sister in Spain and Italy and New York
mm-hmm.
and California is deeply connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
We, all over the world, everything's giving us this moment that God's saying, now let's practice mutual love
mm-hmm.
all over.
And I think, right, like right now, when we look at this huge problem, I'll tell you, when I look at it, when I watch the news, I feel really powerless. Mm-hmm. I feel inept. I feel unable to make a difference. But in reality, that's not true. Because of our connectedness, my choice to do what the medical professionals say help, they help my brother and sister who live next door to me, but it also helps my brother and sister in California and my brother and sister in Guatemala mm-hmm. and my brother and sister in China mm-hmm. because we are all connected. So those individual choices that I do make can be incredibly powerful, yeah, in this world that we live in, and can affect the whole community of the human race.
We have placed our trust in the things of this world that rot and pass away and are not nearly as stable as we think they are. And in these days, we're being shown that fragility. And maybe that's why the words of books like this that we're reading in 1 Peter ring true in a way maybe they haven't before, as we struggle with what does it mean to be a people of faith of a God whose most notable act toward us is self-giving love. Mm-hmm. May we rededicate ourselves as reborn persons to live selflessly, communally. And we have a mechanism for that called the church, mm-hmm, where we are called together to serve together, to challenge one another together, and to change the world together. Mm. Because I believe, and I think you do too, that God is still very much at work, mm, and is weaving a future with us we cannot yet see and may not yet even believe in. But God can make it happen. And it's our call to work with God. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you all.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.